You're listening to a podcast from 702.
702.
Health and Wellness.
And this Health and Wellness feature is brought to you by Zambuk Chest Rub. Breathe easier. Today on our Health and Wellness feature, we're talking about young people and chronic illness. And I was indicating earlier that young people have so much, right, to deal with. And if they have now these chronic illnesses, that adds another pressure. So how do you manage such illnesses as a young person? It could be asthma, it could be diabetes, it could be cancer, epilepsy, or any other chronic illness. How do parents as well help these young ones manage these conditions? Because they have to endure the biological, social challenges associated with growing up. And on top of that, because of the chronic illnesses, they're often hospitalized. You know, they have to undergo repeated procedures. So I want us to talk about young people and chronic illnesses now. And I've got a brilliant guest for this conversation. And if you want to call us to share your experiences with us, maybe you are a young person living with a chronic illness. Maybe you are a parent, right, of a young person living with a chronic illness. How have you been able to manage living with that chronic illness? Have you faced any stigmas? What tips do you have for other parents and other young people? Dr. Juliet Mensah is a specialist physician and HIV clinician who's joining us on the line now. Dr. Mensah, thank you so much for making time. Welcome to the show.
Good morning, Clement, and good morning to all your listeners as well. Thanks for having me.
What are some of the common medical conditions that I experienced in your line of practice as a specialist physician?
Yes, Clement. I think it's just easier to, you know, subcategorize, you know, the different medical condition into six categories just to make it easier. Respiratory conditions in particular are commonest. So things like asthma, flu-like symptoms, which are caused in this case by H influenza virus, tuberculosis, chronic obstructive airway disease, which is strongly linked to a background of smoking history. And also, obviously, we can't rule out our current pandemic where we have seen quite a number of young patients as well presenting with COVID. Okay. If we are to look at cardiovascular conditions, primarily if we're looking at the vessels, we would want to focus more on clinical conditions such as hypertension, heart diseases that would affect more cardiac muscle, and also valvular disease, such as rheumatic heart disease. Other genetic cardiac diseases such as hypertrophic cardiomyopathy, as abbreviated as HOCM, are also common. But this is without withstanding conduction system problems that will cause a slow heart rate versus a fast heart rate, where we see a spectrum of heart blocks and also dysrhythmias as well. The commonest one as well would be metabolic diseases. And as you've touched on, indeed, we're seeing quite a large population group with diabetes who fall within the adolescent stage, of course, extending all the way to adulthood. And this is obviously not limited to that. Our pediatric population is also a counterpart to that. Dyslipidemia, where you have patients with high cholesterol as well, with different types of cholesterol abnormalities, cannot be downplayed. But let me just touch on a little few things that could often be overlooked, such as neurological causes for alarm, like headache, and also a big, huge group of infections such as, HIV. We can't really, exclude that as an entity. Gastrointestinal infections as well, inflammatory bowel disease and inflammatory bowel syndrome as well is quite contributory. I must say one of the bigger groups that are often negated is rheumatological conditions. We often say arthritis occurs in the older age group, but we do see quite a number of patients that present with what we would term juvenile arthritis, with mixed connective tissue disorders and also systemic lupus erythematosus, which is often not so well, not so much awareness as already been given in that light, and it would be really nice to have the general population being aware of that.
Yeah. Thank you for outlining that for us, Dr. Mensah. What are some of the challenges? I was saying earlier when I was just framing our conversation that, you know, young people, you know, have to endure social challenges, right, that are associated with just growing up. And now with these chronic illnesses, you know, yes. they often have to be in hospitals. They have to undergo these repeated, surgery. What have you seen? How are they managing that? And what's the best way for young people to manage that? Or even their parents help them manage that?
Okay. I think there are different factors that one has to look at. You mentioned a very important point, the biopsychosocial approach. I think from a medical perspective, we tend to focus a lot on the biochemical aspect of things. What is the disease pathology? What is the pathophysiology? You know, how do we, you know, treat whether medically or surgically? And that is all fair and good. But I think in the bigger scheme of things, the psychosocial aspect in our adolescent stage and our younger patients cannot be overemphasized. So I think parents should still see a patient, and that's what I try to practice in my usual day-to-day, you know, interaction with patients, but also with their parents and relatives as well, that we still need to look at a human being as holistic. Okay, if one's approach is to look at the underlying condition, but also factor in the psychosocial aspect of things, and how is a teenager, for example, taking into consideration the fact that they've got, you know, type 1 diabetes, and they're constantly in hospital because they're in a diabetic ketoacidosis, which is, you know, an emergency or, you know, emergency complication, should I say, of diabetes. So finding themselves in an environment where they're in an ICU facility, some of them being intubated and ventilated, that cannot be easy on the psyche. Neither can that be easy on the parents. So I think a lot of psychological support should be invested in all age groups, really. It's not necessarily to our young age group, so that we can always ascertain their psychological state and be able to give them support. The support is due. The social aspect is also an important one, because one has to always look at the financial aspect, because, I mean, we live in a quite an uneven, if I may say, a social background. Some, you know, finances are not a cause for alarm, but for others, not only are they dealing with an underlying chronic condition, but they also have to factor in the fact that, you know, there isn't really money to get them through. So quite a holistic approach that we all have to look at. And I find that for patients and doctors that, well, actually doctors that then focus through to the biopsychosocial approach, the outcome is often better with a patient that feels more rounded and, well managed.
Yeah. Let me take some calls on 011-883-0702. Your WhatsApp's on 072-702-1702. Rosemary, you're calling us from Johannesburg. Good morning. Hi, Rosemary.
Hi. Sorry, Clement. Yes, it's me again. I spoke to you guys yesterday. I've listened to the doctor, and it's really challenging having a son with diabetes. He was diagnosed when he was 8 years old. And it was so challenging through this whole COVID, since COVID started. We received a 25% salary from our workplace. I'm not a single parent, I'm the breadwinner in the house. It was like a massive change that we had to go through. Whenever he needs to see his doctor, I must pay 700, I must pay 400. It was strainous on our household. And as I was listening to the doctor, you know, twice a year my son goes, like, he's admitted to hospital, straight ICU. It's something that I can't get used to. And for my son's sake, I really have to just be there as a mother, always giving him the love and support, because he's in this situation where he gets angry for every small little thing, questioning why me. But we all, you know, it's like a doctor says, psychological, it's also very strenuous on a child's schooling and being with his family, friends, stuff like that. I'm actually very, very grateful that you can speak of, you know, situations like that.
Thanks for calling in, Rosemary. Thank you for sharing that experience with us. Yeah, Dr. Mensah, Rosemary has a son who's 17, and she's saying that it's so challenging for him. He's diabetic, and sometimes he asks those questions. And when you spoke about the psycho, like the help also to focus on the emotional support, I suppose it's also important for the parents, right, who are raising these kids, because they need to be strong for them. Sometimes when kids ask, why me? It's often the parents who need to be able to explain why, you know, they're not outcasts. And, you know, so how important is that psychological support for the parents as well?
Yes, Tamitha, I think you've just hit the nail on the head there. And I'm glad that Rosemary was quite open enough to share her own experience. As she was talking, I was actually just going through, you know, what you've just mentioned, that the parents really, in as much as the little ones need a lot of, you know, psychological support equally. You know, they need to have a parent that fully understands what's going on medically, that also is supported psychologically and emotionally as well. So I think that, you know, just focusing, we are all often trained to just focus on, you know, medicine and, you know, prescribing medication, but that's just not good enough. It's just an example, one example of many clinical, you know, conditions, and also background psychological support that most people need. So I think the major thing is to consider psychological support. We often, in my field of work, have you know, biopsychosocial psychologists that will follow up on psychological behavioral therapy for the younger patients. But also, they would equally give psychology, you know, support to the parents as well. And I think if we can, you know, take that and use it as an umbrella approach in our surgical discipline, medical disciplines, and our pediatric disciplines, I think medicine will be quite easy to practice. And at least, even if patients and parents are exposed to the most dreadful diseases, they will always feel supported and comforted.
Mm. Let's go to Carltonville now. Lerato, good morning.
Good morning, Clement. You're speaking to Lerato.
Go ahead, so, Lerato. Thanks for calling.
I'm a young person living with a chronic illness called epilepsy. I've been living with it for more than, like, my whole life, basically. I was diagnosed with epilepsy when I was 1 year, 6 months. And I've been living with it since. And it's hard as a young person living with epilepsy, the challenges that you go through. Unemployment is one of them. Bullying is one of them. Myself, I've had to face bullying in high school. Of every time I would get a seizure, kids would make fun of me, you know. Some kids wouldn't want to be friends with me because I've got epilepsy, you know. Some people will call you names, that you've got a shrinking brain. They've got this thing that they think that if you have seizures, you've got a shrinking brain. Things like that, you know. So it was hard making it through high school. Even in varsity, it was just another thing, because you would find that out of nowhere, you just get a seizure. There was this one time, I was writing an exam. I think I was writing a media law paper. And then after writing that paper, I just collapsed and started having a seizure. And a lot of the times, people are not clued up about epilepsy because there's not much really awareness on the illness. So not people never know what to do in case when someone has a seizure, of which it's hard living with a chronic illness, and your parents on top of that, it's draining to them, because now they face with a child that's got epilepsy. Emotionally, it hurts. Physically, it hurts. It's just a lot.
Can you imagine, Lerato?
You try living with epilepsy, it's just It's heartbreaking because people are not shut up about the illness.
How did you manage, Dorato? Did you have friends that you... I mean, my father has quite chronic epilepsy, and I mean, he's had seizures when I was driving with him in the car, and it used to scare me so much because it can be so traumatic, you know, when he has the seizures. And I often wonder if, like, it's almost like you need to tell people around you that this is what you suffer from, because otherwise when you start having seizures, they don't know what to do. And sometimes they get so scared because they're thinking, oh my God, is this person dying? What's happening? Did you have to tell your friends around you? How did you manage it when you were at school?
I had to tell my friends around me, and most didn't want to be my friends because of that. But there was this one particular girl, Bitumelo. She was the only friend that understood that I had seizures. As much as she wasn't clued up about it, but she knew, okay, Lorato has seizures, and this is what I need to do in case she has seizures. So she was the one friend that was pretty much very supportive. To this day, she's still my friend and still as much supportive it is. And I'm actually lucky that I come from a family that is in the health space. My mom's a nurse. I've got, like, they all work in the health industry. So they are trued up about the illness. They know what it is. I mean, my mom's had quite a couple of patients who are epileptic. So it's easier to deal with it.
No, thanks. Thank you so much, Lerato. Thank you so much for calling in and sharing that story with us. I'm sure there are other people relating to that. In fact, we've got one of our listeners who called in who says she wants to help Lerato, especially with her diet. Our listener is in nutrition. So, Lerato, I'll put you back to Laura, and I think Laura will get you in touch with the listener who's called us. Yeah, Dr. Mensa, want to comment on that?
I think Lerato has just said a mouthful there, and thank you very much, Lerato, for opening up and, you know, not leaving any stone unturned. Seizures and epilepsy are medical terminologies that are often used interchangeably, but I must just put it out there to say that it's not one and the same thing. Seizure is an umbrella terminology that can encompass different types of presentation where neurologically there is a bit of, should I say, a conduction problem from a neurological point of view. Excuse me. Epilepsy in itself as a clinical entity, you need to have ruled out quite a number of things like low glucose, high glucose, because those can result in seizures. But once you've ruled out all that and there is no major cause for alarm or no other reversible cause, then patients can be denoted as having epilepsy.
No. Dr. Juliet, I really thank you. Thank you so much for making time to come have this important conversation with. I think we should have part two of this because we've got so many comments and calls we have not gotten to. Dr. Juliet Mensa is a specialist physician and HIV clinician. Thank you so much for making time.